The following Bass Talk Live iTunes podcast is brought to you by Lowrance. BTL, coming at you. Basscat Boats, Strike King Lures, AFCO, and Duckett Fishing. Good Tuesday, everybody. Welcome once again to BTL Bass Talk Live, where we're going to talk bass fishing and anything else that we want to talk about. My partner in crime, the Grasshopper, Matthew, he is en route to Knoxville, Tennessee for the 2019 Bassmaster Classic. So, our welcome guest, FLW Touring Professional, Mr. Brad Hallman, he is going to break down his performance. And Bradley, we're going to get into all kinds of stuff today, man.
It sounds like it.
I got to tell you, yesterday, very, very stressful day for me. Very stressful. Now, the feedback that I got from the Odd Show yesterday, and you were kind of looking at my sheet there, a tremendous amount of feedback. Some people didn't like it. Most of the people did. And I appreciate some of the comments from people. I did. I spent a lot of time working on that. And for those people that don't agree with my odds, hey, man, have your little game with your office pool or your work pool or whatever. Throw down some money. Have a little entertainment with it. So see if you can make a little money based upon what I did. Now, I want to get into this, Bradley. This was really, really stressful for me. All right? We've got the Classic going on. We're doing some really, really cool stuff that is different. This is going to be my 20th Classic that I've attended. All right, it's quite a few. Very first one was when, Denny Brower won. I think it was 98.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, 98, right. Long time ago. All right. We had, and you've been in the studio, We have an enormous amount of equipment. Now, I got three things going on this trip. The first thing is we're doing something really special with the Classic that people aren't going to be able to see until probably, I'd say, the end of April.
Yeah, you told me you were doing like a Michael Moore type film.
Really cool. Okay. All right. So we're doing some really cool stuff with that. The second thing is we're doing a media event with Duckett Fishing to shoot a bunch of videos and do, you know, just some kind of cool stuff for the Duckett Fishing website.
Right.
So we had to pack for that. And then the third thing is, and I don't know if it's the most important thing, but it is kind of important. We're doing our first one-on-one live with Gerald Swindle versus Jordan Lee on Lake Gunnersville. So I got all this stuff in the studio packed out.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? We use two cameras for the one-on-one live stuff. Everything else is going to... And oh, by the way, I've got a fourth thing. I had to pack all the equipment to do Ike Live and the Bass University Live for Pete Glusick and Mike Iaconelli.
Yeah.
So needless to say, the studio was jammed full of stuff.
Yeah, when I came in this morning, it looked like you were going out of business.
I know. All right, so last night, Matt and I are getting stuff together, and I decided, you know what, man? I need to test this thing one more time. We tested it on Friday. It worked fine. I tested it on Saturday just for a few minutes. Worked fine.
Yeah. Tested last night, not so.
Tested last night, not so fine.
Yeah.
All right. And see that box that's sitting up on that counter? I don't know. And there's a little bitty piece of equipment.
Yep.
All right. That little bitty piece of equipment is $2,000. Guess what didn't work?
That little bitty piece.
That little bitty piece of equipment right there. So I am frantically calling this company, which happens to be on the West Coast, talking to tech support, trying to get things to work. I am pulling my hair out. I'm stressed out. I never get stressed out, dude. I was a little stressed out because, number one, I mean,
I get it.
That little bitty piece right there,
yeah.
You could have hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of equipment, but if that little piece right there doesn't work. So anyway. Yeah.
It's kind of like when a trolling motor goes out on you on the final day.
Yeah, you may have a $70,000 boat, and that trolling motor, you're done.
And what can you do?
Except if you're Jordan Lee, and then you just kind of tool around Lake Conroe and win the Classic. Anyway, so I was stressed out. I got a hold finally of somebody at the company that we use for all this stuff. Dude, he rocked. Right,
he's gonna take care of you.
He is next day airing me another one of those things, and then he said, "When you get back from the event at Gunnersville, just send it back to me. We'll get you taken care of."
That's
I didn't
awesome.
Have to shell out $2,000, so I am grateful for the tech support people and the manager support that we got from the company that did that. But I got to tell you, man, I was a little stressed out.
Dude, I don't blame you. I can totally, totally understand.
I was a little stressed out. So good show today. We're going to talk about your roller coaster ride at Lake Seminole. And Bradley, I'll be honest with you. I follow you, man. I watch you.
No, thank you.
You know, I'm observing what's taking place.
Yeah.
And I looked at the weights on day one and I thought, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
And I'm sure you were thinking the same thing.
I was thinking that all week long.
So let's do this. Let's go ahead and jump in, and we'll talk about first. Let's kind of set it up. Let's talk about your practice first. Actually, I want to back up a minute because in part of my stuff that I was doing to get ready for the Classic Odds show, one of the things that really kind of floored me was I spoke with Aaron Martins, and Aaron Martins told me, dude, I never prepare for a tournament. I don't do research. I do no research. I just kind of show up and you know, figure something out based upon what I find there. I don't do research. He has never done research. All right? So what I want to do with you is I want to go back and kind of set up, did you do research for this event, and then kind of roll it into what you did during practice.
Okay.
All right?
Right.
So research-wise, what did you do for this event?
So my research is usually the same for every event. I don't like calling people. I don't like talking to somebody unless I just happen to have a really good friend that lives somewhere. That's usually not my MO.
Right, that's understandable.
That along with that there's so much on the internet nowadays, especially with lakes that we go to tend to be like Grand Lake where they've had classics or opens or costas. There's usually a lot of history on those places that you can go back and search and find on the internet.
Yeah.
So there's really no need to have to talk to a local or get some idea because there's been so much written in public.
Is that standard practice, Bradley?
I would say
for a lot of people.
It has to be. You can tell it in practice because those guys are all rolling through the same area. So
yeah.
Seminole, for example, has one arm and it's called Spring Creek. It's the one that runs the clearest. It's definitely where it goes down for the majority of the time. That is where probably the biggest, best population of fish is on the entire fishery.
Okay.
You also, just from history and fishing for so long, which is what Aaron's basing a lot of his on, if he's going somewhere that he hasn't been in the last 30 years, which is not very many places, okay?
He's got a lot of experience.
Right. I mean, he's been there 15 times.
So. Yeah.
You can lay out a map, and you can look at it, and most of the guys, I mean, just from looking at a big map, you can tell where the best spawning coves are, or where the best main summer flats are, or where the best wintering spots are. And when you get all three of those combinations together in an area of a lake, you know that that's one of the main populations of fish.
Okay, so based upon what you did, roll into practice now. How was your practice?
First day of the practice, I roll in and I'm fishing offshore grass in Spring Creek and not getting very many bites. And somewhere around 10, 11 o'clock, I went to the bank and there was some hyacin up there. And I think my second or third flip, I catch a 4-pounder. So that's kind of a bad thing for me and a good thing. You know, I took off running with that. And so I've got a flipping stick in my hand for the rest of the day. And I had, you know, a few bites in comparison to some friends of mine that I'm talking to that are on the water at the same time and they're trying to break down the grass. I'm definitely getting more bites than they are, but the quality, the 4-pounder was the best one that I saw all day, the first one that I caught.
All right.
I probably walk away with 12, 13 pounds first day of practice.
Feeling pretty good? Feeling okay?
Ready to go back and flip all day tomorrow for sure
okay.
to push it, okay? So second day I go and I push it all day long and it becomes worse, not better. Some of the things that I start seeing with the pattern is that, the hyacin mat, and I did, I caught a giant on day two flipping. It was a hyacin mat surrounded a cypress tree. I flip in there. I mean, this is a big fish. I don't know how big, but it's big. I caught it, let it go, took one picture, let it go. And, after I let it go, I ease up there on my trolling motor and that cypress tree is actually kind of up in the Spring Creek where there's actually flow and current. Uh-huh. It's on the outside, so it has current on it, and the tree's like 7 foot deep. Well, that's a problem because the fish is not related to that hyacin mat. The fish is related to the base of that tree and the current, which are two totally different deals. So that along with some of the other bites that I was getting, you know, it would either have to be a lay down in the water in the hyacin or in a mat, in a little bit of current. I mean, it was always something special. Had to be there for there to be fish. And then it would only be one. It wouldn't be a group. And then a lot of them were 12, 13 inches. And it just, at the end of the day, after I had spent the entire day doing it, basically 2 days doing it, I'd done it enough now that I knew that I didn't want to do it in there at all in the tournament. So third day of practice, I go back out, and I'm going to fish offshore grass. And I spent the entire day of practice from dark to dark, never had a bite.
So how are you feeling now, Bradley?
Not very good. But what I do know is I don't want to go flip, at least where I had been. And I definitely don't want to go. I don't want to see Spring Creek again the rest of the tournament. Because here's the problem. If I go anywhere where I've been within 3 hours the first morning, if I haven't had a bite, you know, you're just, your confidence, everything. I want somewhere that I've never seen before in my life. That's what I want on the first day of the tournament.
Okay. Now, are you the kind of guy that when that situation occurs, especially nothing happening on the final day of practice, is there one guy that you go back to and you either see him at the hotel or you go like, dude, what the heck? You know, here's what I did. What are your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. I've got Brian Schmidt and Kurt Dove in the house with me 24-7. Brian had a decent practice. He definitely had some stuff that he felt like he could get bit on some offshore grass. Kurt found out the second day of practice that he potentially is allergic to a rain suit.
Really?
Dude, his hands swelled up the size of pumpkins.
How do you become allergic to a rain suit?
I'm telling you, man. I guess when you have allergic reactions, you know, like the first one you have is kind of small. So his hands had swollen before from wearing his raincoats, just fingers and stuff, right? We were at he and I went on Amistad and went way up the river one day just playing, fun fishing. He and I. And I'd given him something to eat. And he's on the front deck of my boat. And he starts talking about his tongue is numb and kind of getting thick. And he thinks it's something that I fed him. I'm like, dude, it's a ham sandwich. I mean, it's Oscar Mayer. There's nothing wrong with it. Anyway, this thing has continued to grow. So after 2 days of wearing his raincoat at Seminole, he comes in that evening. And he's like, guys, you got to see this. I mean, it looks like he's got two pumpkins, and it's starting to come up his wrist. And he's like
the Michelin Man, almost.
So, you know, he takes some Benadryl, and we talk to him. You know, and I'm like, as long, I guess, as your throat or your tongue's not getting thick, I guess you go to bed and go to sleep. So he does, and we wake up the next morning, and honestly, Brian and I were up pretty early and making our lunches, and we don't hear anything from Dove. So, like, I think Brian may have called him or something to see, to make sure that he was up and away. Yeah. He says, hey, I need to talk to you guys. So he comes downstairs and his hands are still
swollen up.
Yeah. You can't even make a fist. So, I mean, you can't even hold a rod. And he's like, what do you guys think I should do? And he's seriously contemplating going fishing. And Brian and I both are like, man, you got to go to the doctor this morning. You can't go fishing. You got to get that taken care of. Because, you know, we're thinking you got 2 more days. You got the last day of practice plus our day off.
Yeah.
You know, to get that swelling down to where you can compete.
Yeah.
So he agrees, and we leave, and we go fish. Well, Kurt doesn't even get to practice the last day of practice. And the first 2 days of practice, I think he caught one fish one day and two fish the next day.
So what was it? Did he go to the doctor?
Yeah, he's allergic to latex.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, they feel like that he's allergic to latex. It's kind of a learning process. He doesn't really know if it's, he kind of feels like right now that he's fine as long as he doesn't eat something while he's wearing it. But I don't know about that. But he can definitely wear his bibs and he has no problem. It's the coat and the sleeves that are causing the issue.
That's bizarre.
Dude, that's a hard problem to have when you're a professional angler.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
Yeah.
All right. Didn't he end up having like 20 pounds on day one or something?
Right. So he goes and gets a shot. And he gets back to where he can at least bend his hands. So what happened? You were asking, do we do this?
Yeah.
So I was thinking about staying up close to takeoff and just flipping. And Brian Schmidt was like, you can't stay up there. You know, you won't catch anything. You got to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
We basically laid out a map, the three of us. We all three talked about it. Kurt was wanting to do the same thing that I was wanting to do. We decided to do it together. We took an area on the map, circled it, and said, we're going in here. It was a big, flat area. I mean, you could tell by looking at the map, you know, that it was a big backwater in the Chattahoochee. It was flat, had lots of grass. It's got two main veins of water feeding it. You could tell that there's a population. There has to be a population of fish living.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, other than, you know, the spring, up the Chattahoochee, it's the number one looking place.
Okay.
So we go in there blind, and we know pretty much what we're going to try to do. We're going to try to chatterbait, swim jig, spinner bait, flip, you know.
Yeah.
Same MO. And so we go in there first day, and Dove comes out with 20 pounds. I come out with one fish. I bailed about 2 hours early, ran back up the river, fished for an hour and a half up there by takeoff, and finally pulled up on one mat, caught two little 13-inchers out of one mat with like 5 minutes to go before weigh-in. Weighed in 5 pounds the first day. And then Kurt, I had seen Kurt. Obviously, we were working together that morning, and he and I both caught our first keeper about the same time. They're just 2 pounders. And then I didn't see him for a while. And about 10 o'clock, I saw him and was hollering at him across the point. And he told me he had two, but he said one of them's a really good one. And so I knew that, you know, he probably had a 5 to 7 pounder for him to see.
Yeah.
But I didn't see him again. And so I was shocked, you know, honestly, when he came in, because he was in his truck and he was leaving, and we were in a group of people anyway. I said, "How'd you do today?" And I heard him say something, but I couldn't completely. I thought he said 20. And I turned to the Garmin guy next to me. I said, "What did he say?" And he said 20. I was like, so I went from feeling like you feel after you catch 5 pounds.
Yeah.
I felt like I'd caught 20 almost. I mean, I felt so good. I was like, dang it. One of us finally got it, you know, so it worked out. But it gave us the room to move on day two. So, like I said, it was a big area. So that night we sat down. And I was like, "Look, I don't want to get on top of you at all. Where all are you at?" And he's here. So this is a big backwater. So I went to the other side of it, and I said, "I'll try to find another bait that they'll eat, and I'll try to find some more water in there."
Hang on. Is this day two?
This is day two.
All right. I don't want to get into day two yet.
Okay.
We're going to take a commercial break, and then we're going to come out and come back and get into day two, because this is where the roller coaster starts to go this way.
Yeah.
All right. And I'm really interested that night, what happened that night after he catches 20, and then suddenly you're kind of banging your head against the wall, and I want to know what that conversation
Absolutely.
Was like.
All
right.
Yeah.
So let's take a break. Also, man, take a look at that odd sheet right there. We're going to get your thoughts on some of the odds that I threw down yesterday, and see if I'm way off base or if there's some that you agree with.
All I right? see a couple in here that I've got some thoughts on.
All right. We'll take a break. Come back with Bradley Hallman in studio. Everybody, we'll be right back.
Sleek new design with easy control file. The clearest images underwater with uncompromising range. Live mapping from the touchscreen. View notifications, video, even Google Maps on screen. And for the first time ever, real-time view of fish movements with Live Sight Sonar. HDS Live. New from Lowrance.
The heart of the Basscat experience is the pride of ownership that comes with each blast-off and every precision hairpin turn. It's a rush of adrenaline driven by the total commitment to performance and the knowledge that no compromises were made building a craft that stands up to the rigors of competitive angling. Basscat combines the latest proprietary materials and building techniques with over 40 years of continuous family-run operation and our unwillingness to accept anything less than the best. Welcome to Basscat. Feel the rush.
Some people have seen a green ghost. Green Ghost, the new rod from Duckett Fishing. $79. It's coming February 2019. Duckett Fishing, pro driven.
It's about the hours spent getting everything just right. It's the attention to detail. Good just isn't good enough. It's the years spent on the water day after day. When you tie on a bait by Strike King, you're standing on the shoulders of legends.
Pros depend on hydraulic jack plates to get the best out of their boats. Do what they do. Demand Atlas Performance. Atlas gets you from the bottom to the top in less than 8 seconds, even with the big four strokes. And when you gotta turn right around and get that heavy load back up in rough water, Atlas's innovative design and American-made components will get you there with confidence.
I'm Ott Depot. Just look for yourself. There's an Atlas jack plate on just about every professional's boat.
The Atlas Hydraulic Jack Plate. You can depend on it.
The message is simple. win. Coming in 2019, the Duckett Fishing Silverado. It's coming at you for $99.95. Check it out at DuckettFishing.com. There is no gray area, just silver. Check it out.
Hey guys, Aaron Martins here. I'm going to be telling you about a new product by Sunline. It's Siglon PE times 8. I've been using it almost extensively all year for my frogging, flipping, drop shotting, shaky heading, worming, jerk baiting. It's by far my favorite Sunline braid. I don't say this unless I think it's true, but honestly, it's the best braid in the market out of any of the braids. Definitely check it out. It's a price point line, $14.95 for 165 yards, and that could last you a whole year, just one spool with using leader material. So again, it's Siglon PE times 8. It's my favorite braid, and I think if you use it, it'll be your favorite braid too.
Avco has a new foul weather rain suit called the Hydronaut. A lot of the features that I really like about it first is the speed vent hood. If it's raining out, you know how a person gets wet is when you run down the lake and the hood comes down. With the speed vent hood, it's going to stay up. It has a camera mount in the pocket on the chest. The Hydronaut has a two-layer, 100% waterproof nylon shell. If you're interested in a rain suit that has a lot of cool features that's going to keep you dry, you need to check out the Hydronaut from Avco.
All right, we are back on a Tuesday, classic week. And we're going to talk about your day two, Bradley, here in a minute. But I want to ask you a quick question. There's 2 weeks that are probably the worst week to win an event, all right? And I know what you're thinking here. You're perplexed. This look on your face is like, what the hell are you talking about, Jeffries? But listen.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a bad week.
Listen, I get it, all right? But from a publicity standpoint,
yeah.
The week before the Classic is won.
Yep.
And we're talking about Brian Latimer, even though there has been an enormous amount of feedback and congrats and right. everything else. Right. The dude, it was freaking awesome. One of the most emotional weigh-ins and reactions that I've ever seen covering this game for so many years. And then the other week is when you have a back-to-back week. Because the guy that wins on the first week, mm-hmm. by the time that the next week happens, everybody's kind of forgotten about the dude that won the first one.
That's right.
You agree with that?
100%.
Yeah.
The best one to win is to win the first one of the year. It's like in January and there's not another tournament for another month.
Exactly.
And so like everybody's waited to that time to catch them, and then you get a lot out of that.
I know that there's a lot of discussion on social media. B-Lat very active on social media, and a lot of people out there really, really giving him props for what he did. And we'll talk about that here in a minute. But now I want to get into day two. But before you jump in on that, what was your take after day one when you got back and you were eating dinner, you were kind of settling down, and your thought process on what the hell am I going to do on day two?
Well, you know, when you have such a bad day, I don't even really want to look at the results, but you kind of got to, because you got to know what kind of goal weights are realistic that you could get back in.
You know,
can I get back in the check range? Can I get back in the top 30?
Yeah.
Sometimes those things are possible, and sometimes it may just be, hey, how do I just salvage this and get inside 100 and don't completely bomb this tournament for points? That tournament, the way that it's set up, you know, that place had the bags and the potential that you could make it all the way back to the top 30 if you had a really good day.
Yeah.
So that was in my mind.
A lot of discussion between your roommates, or were you kind of
110%. So,
okay.
And what had kind of happened was kind of the flip flop. Brian had a really bad day. Really had some really good stuff. His timing was off, and he was in between some guys that were at the top of the leaderboard on a couple of places that he was wanting to fish. And then Kurt and I had kind of gone blind, and you know, now Kurt's at the top of the world because he's got 20 pounds and he's in fifth or sixth place.
Mr. Swollen Hands.
So the conversation was basically, how did we get bit? What did we see? You know, those kinds of things.
Okay.
And what can we do to work for tomorrow?
All right. Hey, real quick, and now we're going to get into day two. I do want to let everybody know, because there was a post on the instant feedback. We did everything we could, Brian, to try and get Brian Latimer on the show today. Just couldn't get it worked out. Joe Pogger with FLW does a great job. He was really trying hard.
Yeah, he had day five yesterday and everything else.
Yeah. So, you know, and once again, like I said, the week of the Classic, after you just win, you know, your first major event, it kind of takes away a little bit. And if it wasn't for scheduling and everything that we had, we would do, once again, everything we could to get him on the show today. Unable. So we're going to try and get him on after we return from the one-on-one live event at Lake Guntersville. So 2-3 weeks, we definitely want to get him on, though. All right, man. So go ahead and continue. Now you're at takeoff, day two. What's your thought process?
Thought process is just to go back down to the area that we'd been in and just put your head down and go to work. Kurt had caught his fish, all five big ones, just the day before on chatterbait. And so I took a lot of rods off my deck. I think I had 3 rods on my deck the last day. And I went in, started fishing. I think I did catch one on chatterbait about 8:30 in the morning. Sun got up a little bit about 9, and it was a little bit calmer, so I picked up a swim jig, and within 5 or 10 minutes, I got a couple of bites that were pretty quick, and they hit it really aggressively. It was a sign that they definitely liked that bait better. And it just carried out throughout the day with that bait. Got into a couple areas where I had 3 or 4 or 5 bites at one time. And then somewhere around midday, I caught a 6-9. That tended to change everything.
So, yeah.
And that's back to that Florida deal. You know, it's always about that big bite for everybody. I mean, it really is. And if you can get 2 or 3 of them, then you're at the top. But you need 1 or 2 just to move up, you know, and stay in the money range. So finished out the day, felt pretty good, pushed it about as long as I could stay there, and I probably had about 15 pounds. This is the best part of the story. This is where, like, you know, things happen that are magical. But I pushed it and stayed in there about as long as I could. I had about a 30-minute run back to takeoff. So I ran back. I got up there, and I literally had about 4 minutes on my clock is what I had to fish if I wanted to fish. And like I say, I was pretty happy with what I had.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it to, you know, get a check or anything like that. But at least salvaged some points. And I pull in, and I thought I had 4 minutes, so I had that mat that I'd caught the 2 out of the day before. I pull in there, power pole down, just coast right up to it, power pole down, and flip, nothing. There's nothing there. I've got about a minute, and then I've got to go. I pull up my power poles, and I turned, and I'm going away from this mat, and I just happened to flip the outside edge, and I looked away for a second, and when I looked back, my line was moving out, set the hook. It's a 1-pound coil. You know, it's a 1-pound coil from what I got in the boat. So I swing in the boat. I'm like, hell yeah. Throw it in a live well, chunk the little one, pull the trolling motor, you know, and on the way in. So at the time, you know, I was like, man, that just really was a good capping on the day. But when it was all said and done, it was the difference in getting paid and not getting paid, that one fish. So that whole last second deal that we all push, which usually, you know, out of 100 tournaments or maybe more, you don't ever get anything out of it. There is those few times, you know, that you get something from that.
Dude, how often has that happened to you? Seriously.
That's what I'm saying. 1 out of 200 days, maybe, you know. But if it happens just once, it's worth it. But, you know, if it happens 1 out of every 100, let's say that happens 1 out of every 100. That means that there's 2 guys just about at every tournament, on every single tournament that can come in and tell that story.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And sometimes it's a lot more than a 1-pound coal. It's a 4 or 5-pound coal.
Yeah. So this area that you caught your 15 pounds in until you called up to 16 or whatever it was.
Right.
Had you practiced there? Was it an area that you saw on the map? Or was it just a place, you know, I've never been here before. Boom, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to fish.
It was the same area that we had done from day one, from the first day of the tournament. I mean, the whole time, we never left.
Okay.
I mean, we literally circled that Fairchild area, and we went in there and we put our heads down and didn't come out, and it was a big area. And when it was all said and done, we picked a pretty good one. I was counting yesterday. I think there were 7 checks cashed out of it.
Wow.
There were 3 or 4 top 30s out of there. Rob Kilby was in there. He was at the top, so he made a top 10 out of there.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the kind of area that you want to put yourself in, from practice to that. And, you know, I'm not saying this is the way you should ever, no one ever wants to fish a tournament that way. Spend 3 days of practice and throw it all out the window. That's not how you, not how you want tournament fishing.
How many times have you done that? Just totally ditched everything that you found.
I don't know.
I'm just going fishing.
I don't know that I have. We do that some, but you do it within the area that you're already in and had some success in.
Right.
To completely go, you know, miles away from anything that you've seen.
Yeah.
Kurt and I talked about, I don't think I've ever done it, and I don't think he has either.
Wow.
I mean, that's pretty hard to do.
Especially, you're doing, I mean, obviously you love to flip. I mean, that is your thing. And when that wasn't going down on that one day of practice where you had zero bites, I mean, mentally, to be able to perform at the level that you did, at least on that final day, and forget about the miracle that happened in the last minute or whatever, still, to go out and produce 15 pounds, making the adjustment that you had to make and kind of going into it blind, that kind of says a lot about your game, though, man.
Well, it felt like pulling a rabbit out of the hat. It really did. But, you know, the season hasn't gone the way that I want it to so far. Obviously, I've had some struggles, and hopefully this is the beginning of a new start and kind of going the other direction. I do feel like it is.
All right. Let me get your thoughts on Brian Latimer. A very, very emotional weigh-in in a driving rainstorm. I mean, it was pouring rain.
Yeah.
But that guy has worked his tail off. It's a very, very cool story to see what he's done. What are your thoughts on what he was doing and kind of how he pretty much kind of dominated that week?
He did, and he definitely was on the best school of fish. I met Brian, I don't know, 3 years ago or so, and it may have been his rookie year when he started. I don't remember. Up at Beaver Lake, we sit down, had lunch together one day, and I really do like the young man a lot.
Yeah.
There's no doubt he's put in a lot of time and energy, and you can see that emotion on his face whenever he won.
Yeah.
It's very emotional, like you said. As far as his fishing, I don't know what he did. That's why I was kind of hoping we had him on today, to be honest with you, because I was wanting to talk to him because I was curious about – I had heard that day one and maybe part of day two, he did some damage in some other areas, some other ways.
Yeah.
A little further up the river. But when I turned on live on Sunday – and was driving home, the millfoil that he was flipping kind of took me back to some of the stuff that used to happen at Gunnersville back when you were going to your first classic.
Yeah.
Many years ago, that is what would happen. So you had these big hydrilla beds out on Gunnersville in the springtime, and then there would be these places with millfoil, and the millfoil would be more spotty and, you know, leave open spots.
Yeah.
And those open spots in the millfoil they were spawning in, and guys would go and flip that millfoil out on the main river and crack them. Very similar to what happened with Latimer.
All right. Maynard wants to know, how far did you run up? He said that's kind of a dangerous run. Is that true?
How far did we run up?
He says, how far up the Hooch? Was that area?
Fairchild's not that far. It may be 5 miles.
Did you go past that at all during practice or anything?
No. I never even went over there and practiced. I did stop there on my way home from Toho, so I had been up the Hooch, and I had, you know, driven through some of those places.
Yeah.
But
it's kind of gnarly, isn't it?
Man, it's a navigational channel. I mean, they run barges up and down. It's got buoys up and down. And I don't think it's that bad.
All right.
Now, I'm not saying that. Seminole, listen, Seminole overall.
It's kind of tricky.
It's top three toughest that I've ever been to run in my entire life.
Okay.
I mean, it's right there with Santee Cooper. I mean, it's got some places in it that you lose your lower unit real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Good point. All right. What's up next, man? What do you think about the next stop?
Our next stop for the FLW Tour is a little place up the road called Grand Lake of Cherokee. I don't know, man. I have mixed feelings about it. I'm excited to go. Obviously, there's no place like home.
Yeah.
But I fished two Elite Series events there. One of them went pretty good. One of them didn't go so good. So I've got some national level experience there. And, of course, I won a Costa there a couple years ago. And it's really tough up there right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there was a 90-something boat tournament there Saturday.
Yeah.
And 75 boats blanked. So.
I was up there. I didn't fish, but I was up there this weekend and talked to a bunch of people that I knew that were around there. And it is. It's not. It's kind of that funk. You know, everybody thinks that around the country that it's just this massive fishery that you can go up there anytime and catch 15, 20 pounds. It's not like that, especially there is that gap there. And you know it a hell of a lot better than I do, but there is that gap in the early spring, that pre-spawn, where it gets really, really tough.
It really has a lot to do with the shad kill.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening is, you know, when the water starts to warm back up, the shad start dying. And when they die everywhere. So the birds are gorging themselves, the fish are gorging themselves, and, and your little plastic fake minnow, they're not buying, you know.
Yeah.
And that's really what's happening. And it gets very tough. But the good news is that window usually lasts 2 to 3 weeks, and that's it.
Yep.
And so it had started prior. So our tournament should be on the tail end of that where it's coming back up.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping.
Your friends calling you on that one, Bradley? Your friends kind of – what do you think, man? You think they'll dive into the mind of Brad Hallman on that?
My buddies around. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey, it's fair for one, fair for all. I help them all I can, bud.
All right, let me ask you this. The classic, you know, it is classic week.
Yep.
And I'm kind of going to make a comparison on what's going down this week in Knoxville and what you're going to deal with, obviously on a much lower scale, but the situation that Odd Defoe is in,
Right.
You know, he's the favorite. Everybody knows. He lives there. He's familiar with it. His classic performance in previous classics is amazing. I mean, he's the guy. Him and Wesley Strader, two guys that I feel like, from what I know of them, that pressure doesn't really get to them. And this whole HFA and knowing the body of water so well, I think they're going to be able to handle that situation. What about you with the situation at Grand Lake? Dude, you've won a ton of money on that body of water. You love that body of water. Is there added pressure on you to perform well at that event simply because of the success that you've had on that body of water?
There may be a little bit, but, you know, like I said, I've fished other national tour level events there in the past.
Yeah.
If this was the very first one, I'd be a little more geared up. But
yeah.
I know the reality of it, and I know the reality of the tournaments that I've done well there in regional levels and stuff. And it's basically about being relaxed and just going and doing your deal. You get too geared up, try to cover too much water, try to see too much in practice. I mean, you can't fish that lake dam to dam. And we both know that they live. And that's one of the things that I've told them.
Dam to dam.
They live from dam to dam.
Yeah.
And they can come from anywhere, but just staying relaxed, I think, is one of the things that Ott and Wesley both will do well at because of their, you know, those guys are veterans. They've been doing it for 20 years, both of them. They've both fished a lot of tournaments. See, that's something we were just talking about, the fact that FLW. So if you go back and you look at your little list here.
Yeah, 07, 08, 10, and 11.
So all the tenured FLW tour guys have been on Loudoun 4 to 5 times.
Yeah.
You know, at a national level tournament.
Yeah.
So that in itself will help them relax, understand what areas got beat up, what areas still kind of that weren't didn't receive as much pressure that they were able to hold on to later in the event.
You know, and talking to those guys, Brad, you bring up a good point. I had no idea that body of water receives that much pressure. There is a ton of pressure on that body of water, a number of tournaments, a number of little fruit jar, jackpot, whatever you want to call it. And I think those guys that I have more at the top of my odds sheet or the better odds, I think they know how to adjust. There were three things that I said yesterday are really the key. One is motivation. There's a lot of guys that are extremely motivated to win this one. The second one is the experience factor. All right.
Yep.
The ability to adjust based upon what has happened during practice than what is happening on the first day of the tournament. All right. You got a lot of guys out there that may be dialed in based upon what they found in practice. But the consensus was what I got back from the guys that I spoke with after their final day of practice was things are going to change. The ability to change. And then obviously the experience factor. Being in this position, knowing how much pressure. You know, Matt tried to tell me, oh, it's just another event, you know. Guys can deal with pressure all the time. And I'm like, dude, it is a different level of pressure. You agree with that?
I do. But I don't know that it's really going to mount up until you get to a day three.
I agree.
For these guys.
Yes, I agree.
I mean, the pressure's not going to be on until day three.
But you take a guy like an Odd Defoe, and let's say somebody like a Drew Benton, who I've got, you know, I don't know, like 70 to 1 or something.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason that he got in is because he won Bass Fest. He finished 51st, I believe, in the point standings. Did not have that great a year. Never had been in that position before. If he's in that position on Sunday, who's going to be feeling the tie collar a little bit more?
Yeah, I agree. But here's one thing too. I mean, this kind of goes against the grain of what you're saying. This is a totally different tournament than any other tournament on the planet. You've heard them say it.
Points don't matter. It's all about the win. Agree?
So all these guys get here year after year by sweating and stressing the points. They're willing to salvage. They don't just go run off something they've never seen before in their life. They're going to pound out what they know where they can salvage and catch five keepers and try to get a check and save points no matter wherever they are.
Yeah.
This tournament, that pressure is gone, and it's lifted off of them. So they live under that umbrella their entire career, every single day. But when they get to this tournament, that no longer matters.
That's a good point.
Now they can swing every single day, and swinging is going to places that you've never seen before and trying in tournament because of what you're on. It's not the ceiling and the level of what you can catch where you are is not good enough, and you know it.
Yeah, I agree with that. Have you ever been on that body of water?
Have not. Not on Fort Loudoun.
Yeah.
Well, I might have been there as a child or something, as a kid with my dad.
Being from Tennessee?
Yep, yep. But I was over on Watts Bar. I'm sure I've been on Fort Loudoun, you know, but I'm sure it was striper fishing or something, night or something weird that I don't remember.
Yeah.
But, same thing with Wesley. So Wesley's from Watts Bar. It's not really his home lake. He's a Watts Bar guy. He's down in Spring City, probably closer to Chickamauga and all that than he is Fort Loudoun. And Ott, I don't think Ott is Fort Loudoun guy either. Now, I'm talking about, you know, like home jackpots on Wednesday nights, you know, close locals. Yeah. I'm sure they both fish tournaments there coming up.
They fished
and all
a
that.
Ton of BFLs there over the years, man.
Right, right.
All right, so knowledge, experience. We'll see, man. We'll see. All right, now, if you look at that odd sheet, you've looked at it for a little. Oh, one other thing I want to mention real quick. Your point about, obviously, points don't matter, and it's all about the W and all that and everything. Matt made a great point yesterday, and I don't remember what year it was, but it was a year that Skeet Reese did not do well. I mean, he was way, way down at the bottom. But Matt was right by saying, you know, even though he finished way, way, way down the leaderboard, he was probably one of the guys that had the closest opportunity to win. It was just one adjustment or one move that he made that made that difference, where everything that he had to be dialed in, he stuck with it. He didn't, you know, veer away from what the plan was and really thought.
What year are we talking about?
I don't remember. I don't remember what year it was. He finished way down.
Okay.
But based upon everything that he had and everything that he was trying to execute in his game plan, it was probably the closest time that somebody finished down the leaderboard a pretty good ways that really had a legit shot at winning. Because of what you're saying, that, you know, it doesn't matter. Who's going to care if you finish 13th or 33rd?
That's right.
You know? It really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. All right, so if there was one wager that you could take based upon my odds yesterday on that sheet, if you had $1,000, who would you throw it down on based upon those odds?
Well, give me $2,000. Let me put $1,000 on each one because I've got a few that I'd want to bet on.
All right, I'll give you two bets for and once again, folks, this is for entertainment purposes only. I am not a bookie.
All right. I really, really, really – where's the odds? See, I like it even better because I make it up and he's not that good. I'll take the 8-1, Jared Littner.
Okay.
I'm on the Littner train right now.
Hey, listen to this. One of the stats on Littner that I had no idea until I was doing my research.
Yeah.
He has over $1 million in earnings.
Yeah.
Had no idea.
That guy's got, I don't know, man. I see a lot of similarities with he and I when I watch him sometimes with the way he fishes and his style. And I met his friend Nick Salvucci out on the West Coast. It's a good thing those guys weren't in Oklahoma or we would have all been. Woo, fun. But, I'm going to take that at 8-1 for sure. And then for $1,000, and I'm not just doing this because he's an Okie or because of redemption. Man, it's only 2-1. I don't want to bet on the 2-1. I'm only going to win $1,000.
There's a reason he's 2-1, dude.
Yeah, I guess so. Jason, and the reason that I really look at that is because he's had some really good tournaments there during the FLW Tour.
Yeah.
He had some things figured out.
Yeah.
And I remember that. I remember when he was doing that in 07 and a couple of those years. So.
Yeah.
That would be in his wheelhouse.
All right, man. Pick a winner. Not
pick
a bet.
A winner.
Not a wager, but pick a winner. Who do you think's going to win this thing? Are you going, by the way?
I am. I'll be there.
Okay.
Yep.
Pick a winner. A winner chicken dinner. How could we not pick it? We're going to pick Kevin Van Dam.
Wow.
Wow.
All right. All right.
That's my pick.
If he wins, you know he gets to come back again next year, too. How about that?
That's my going away party.
Wow. All right. Here, let me ask you this. Just for giggles, if Mike Iaconelli wins, do you think he retires on stage? That's it. I'm done. Finished. Over. I'm moving on to the next stage of my life.
You may be in the loop a lot more than I am. Maybe the rumors are flying. But
no, there are no rumors. I mean, I'm just...
Man, I can tell you honestly, just me being an outsider looking in
yeah.
and looking at what all he's got going on in his yeah. life, I could see him doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And folks, I have no inside info on that. Just none. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I just, with everything that he's been going on.
He's got a lot going on.
And I know. The one thing about Mike, and I don't think a lot of people realize this, how much of a dedicated dad that he is. And I think his kids are at the stage right now where there are so many times that he feels that emotion that goes with, and you know it too, of missing certain events that is taking place in his family by having to be on the road, and it's just part of it.
Yep.
And I think it's... You know, really, really influencing a lot of things that he's going to do in his career now and in the future. But, folks, I'm going to tell you, man, there's not too many dads out there that are better than Mike Iaconelli.
I would be surprised if he walked away, though. I'm telling you, it's a hard thing to give up. I don't think he would.
All right, when are you getting down there, man?
I think I'm going to drive. I think I'm just going to get in the truck Thursday and drive. We're going to the Thunder game Wednesday night. Stay up late, go to the Thunder game, and then get up early Thursday morning and drive to Tennessee. I think my 9-year-old boy is going to go with me.
Cool.
Yep. Looking for a good time.
All right. Very cool. Man, can't thank you enough for coming in here. I know the fans really appreciate you breaking down what goes down on your events on the FLW Tour. And what? There was somebody in Georgia that told you that. Yeah. That you ran into.
Yeah. I ran into a guy. I said, hey, man, I really enjoy having you on BTL. And so... I'm always amazed this many people watch Mark.
Good point, man. I can't figure it out. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Anyway, folks, tomorrow, a best of show. And then please do not forget to check out what we have going on with our one-on-one live next Wednesday, 9 a.m. Central Time. Jordan Lee versus Gerald Swindle. And if one of those two guys win, I don't know what we're going to do. I think we can find a couple of guys on Gunnersville
Absolutely.
To do it.
Yeah, somebody will.
There's plenty of them around there. All right, everybody be safe. Remember, right, make sure you review us on iTunes if you have not done that and give us a rating. And then also, man, we're going to be at the Classic. I'll be hanging around. I'll probably have a camera in my hand. Please come up to me. Would love to chat with you. And we will get ready to crown a 2019 Bassmaster Classic champion. Bradley, be careful. Everybody out there, stay safe. We will be back next week. Everybody, stay tuned.